the headlines, people take to the streets in the Iranian capital to denounce the recent riots that have erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Tehran summons the British ambassador to protest the role of London-based Persian-language media outlets in inciting riots across the country. And voting is underway for a third day in four Ukrainian regions and referendums on joining Russia. Thanks for joining us. Iranians are out on the streets across the country to denounce the latest riots that have erupted in a number of cities over the past week. Crowds of protesters are rallying to denounce the desecration of sanctities as well as acts of vandalism during the riots. The rioters have blocked the streets, vandalizing public property and police vehicles, setting fire to dozens of ambulances. That followed the death of a 22-year-old woman earlier this month after she was taken into police station. Tehran Police Commander Hossein Rahimi has rejected claims that Mahsa Amini was physically assaulted. Officials say that she died of medical conditions. Iran summoning the British and Norwegian ambassadors in connection with the recent riots in the country. The Foreign Ministry says it called in the British ambassador to protest the hostile propaganda of London-based Persian-language media against the Islamic Republic. The ministry lodged Tehran's strong protests with the UK government, saying the media Britain is hosting have been provoking riots in Iran over the past days. The ambassador was told that such measures represented interference in Iran's domestic affairs, as well as acts against its national sovereignty. The Norwegian ambassador was also summoned over what the foreign ministry said were meddlesome, false, and partial comments by the country's parliament speaker. The foreign ministry protested to Oslo about such unconstructive remarks and interference in Iran's domestic issues. Academic and political analyst Hakimeh Sarayabiria tells us how the anti-Iran propaganda machine has weaponized hijab and is trying to incite hatred and violence in society.
The issue has been weaponized, which means that it has been, you see all sorts of Islamophobia going on, trying to incite hatred among the people, trying to incite violence, all kinds of black propaganda going on. You see that, for example, with this, this latest incident that happened, before anything was finalized about what happened, with this lady that lost her life, the foreign propaganda machine started talking about all sorts of unfounded assertions that were meant to create hatred, to create discord, to create violence, to incite violence among people.
Iran is criticizing the U.S. for making exceptions to its communications sanctions when it comes to undermining the country's security and stability. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says by loosening a number of communications sanctions while keeping the maximum pressure campaign in place, the U.S. is only trying to provoke instability in Iran. Kanani called those tactics hypocritical and nefarious designs meant to violate Iran's national sovereignty and said that they will not go unanswered. The U.S. Treasury has issued a license to loosen internet sanctions on Iran, allegedly to support the free flow of information to the Iranian people. But the Iranian government says that it has restricted access to internet in some areas to deal with violent riots and vandalism. The UK Prime Minister is considering a controversial move to relocate Britain's embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. The announcement has already angered Palestinians who have long hailed Al-Quds as the capital of their future state. Liz Truss, of course, has made no bones about her pro-Israel stance, But why she's putting this potential move at the top of her list is questionable, given that the UK is grappling with so many economic problems at this point in time.
Indications are coming from the UK Prime Minister Liz Truss, who is considering to break with decades-old tradition and move the UK embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. This move has been strongly criticized by not only Palestinians, but the UN. A number of special rapporteurs have said relocating the British embassy to Al-Quds would break with international law and UN resolutions and reverse decades of British policy.
The capital of Israel. Thank you.
The potential move of the embassy to Al-Quds follows the footsteps of the former U.S. President Donald Trump.
President Trump, by recognizing history, you have made history.
It also led to Palestinians' fierce condemnation, leading to protests and clashes in which Israeli forces killed dozens of Palestinians. Even the former UK Prime Minister Theresa May criticized the move at the time. Special Rapporteur focused on Palestine has said, two or more wrongs do not make a right. Acts altering character, status, the demography of Al-Quds have no legal effects and are null and void and must be rescinded. But why would the UK Prime Minister consider such a move when the UK is grappling with a series of crises which are more important for a new Prime Minister, like a cost of living crisis that has gripped the UK, getting worse by the day? Liz Truss has not hidden the fact of her pro-Israeli stance. She has said that under my leadership, Israel will have no stauncher friend in the world. That's what I've done as Foreign Secretary and Trade Secretary. I don't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. She also said that she would further solidify her ties with Israel by signing a free trade deal with Israel. This is interesting since she has rejected that notion with the U.S. at this point in time. Liz Truss has admitted that the UK will not strike a post-Brexit free trade deal with the U.S. for a number of years.
The relocation of embassies from Tel Aviv began with the former U.S. President Donald Trump. Other countries who have followed in Washington's footsteps were the Honduras, Australia, the Czech Republic, Serbia, and Slovakia. Yet this move does nothing to solve the Palestinian issue. One reason for the embassy relocations has been the so-called normalization of ties between some Arab countries and Israel, another precedent set by Trump.
The controversial consideration by the UK Prime Minister to move UK's embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds may have been put in overdrive when Truss made this promise to Israel during her campaign to become Prime Minister. During the Tory leadership contest, she addressed this to an influential lobby group called the Conservative Friends of Israel. But who is the Conservative Friends of Israel? It is a British parliamentary group affiliated to the Conservative Party. It's dedicated to strengthening business and political ties between the UK and Israel, as well as between the British Conservative Party and the Israeli Likud Party. At one point, for example, it was accused of bankrolling the Tories, where 50% of the MPs in the shadow cabinet are Conservative Friends of Israel members. Back in 2017, secret tapes exposed the amount of Israeli influence over the UK Conservative Party. Israeli embassy linked political operators discussed taking down Foreign Minister Alan Duncan, boasting of planting parliamentary questions.
Eloquent Labour Friends of Israel, they're trying, they want to stop Sharon, young,
This expose revealed how the senior political officer at the Israeli embassy in London discussed a potential plot to take down British politicians, including a minister of state at the Foreign Office who supported Palestinian civil rights. Desmond Sway, a former Conservative minister and parliamentary aide to former Prime Minister David Cameron, described it best when he said at the time that what we cannot have is Israel acting in the UK with the same impunity that it enjoys in Palestine. Clearly, an interference in another country's politics of the murkiest and most discreditable kind. It is no secret that Israel uses its lobby power in the U.S. to have Washington make decisions in its favor, especially the powerful lobby group AIPAC. This covers things like supporting Israel at the U.N., approving arms sales in the billions of dollars, to pro-Israel stance when it comes to issues like illegal settlements. Now Israel has a pro-hawkish prime minister in Downing Street that it can count on. And for as long as she is in office, Israel is making sure that she will act on Israel's behalf. It is not that far off to conclude that Truss has promised favors for Israel when it comes to the issue of doing business in exchange for Israeli investment, so that together we can create well-paid, high-value jobs in both countries, as stated by the International Trade Secretary, Anne-Marie Trevelyan. Her new tax cuts, described as trickle-down economics, was reported to disproportionately benefit the rich and make her unpopular. This may, by default, involve Israeli businesses who would warmly receive her plans to slash taxes despite the economic crisis.
Four Ukrainian regions are voting for the third day in referendums on joining Russia. The Luhansk and Donetsk self-proclaimed republics of the east, as well as the partly Russian-controlled southern regions of Kherson and Zaporizhia, are holding the referendums. The voting will end on Tuesday. Russia says the regions will be under Moscow's full protection if they vote to join Russia. Russian media reports say the country's parliament can move to formalize the regions joining Russia within days. But the vote has drawn condemnation from Ukraine and the West. They have dismissed the votes as a sham and pledged not to recognize the results. The U.S. has threatened Moscow with swift and severe economic costs over what it calls Moscow's plan to annex those regions. Moscow says that it is up to the residents of the four regions to decide if they want to be part of Russia. Meanwhile, as the war in Ukraine drags on into its eighth month, Moscow accuses Kiev of continuing missile strikes around the Zaporizhia nuclear plant.
The Kiev regime continues its provocations near Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. Once again, Ukrainian artillery shelled residential areas of Enerhodar and the territory next to the nuclear power plant.
The spokesman added that Russian forces have intercepted all the missiles as well as eight kamikaze drones outside of the territory of the power plant. He said radiation levels remain normal at the plant located in southern Ukraine. Over the past months, Russia and Ukraine have been trading blame over the shelling of Europe's biggest nuclear power station. The plant has been under Russian control since March. Moscow has warned that the strikes threaten a nuclear catastrophe that could consume all of Europe. Italians are casting their ballots in early elections for the lower house and the Senate. The elections are forecast to return Italy's most right-wing government since World War II and usher in its first woman prime minister. A right-wing alliance led by Giorgia Meloni's Brothers of Italy party appeared on course for a clear victory when the last opinion polls were published 2 weeks ago. However, there's been speculation that support for the left-leaning five-star movement has also picked up in recent days. That could jeopardize the rightist alliance's chances of winning a majority in the Senate. But whatever the result, Meloni would be the obvious candidate for premier as the leader of the right-wing alliance. The early elections were triggered by party infighting that brought down Prime Minister Mario Draghi's National Unity Government in July. In the Philippines, a super typhoon slams into the heavily populated main island of Luzon, forcing hundreds to flee their homes. Nauru is packing winds of up to 240 kilometers per hour after an explosive intensification. The country's Center for National Disasters said it could cause landslides, flash flooding, and dangerous storm surges, including in the capital, Manila. Authorities previously issued an extreme emergency alert as the storm reached super typhoon status on Sunday morning. More than 2,500 people have been stranded due to ferry cancellations. Dozens of flights in and out of the capital have also been canceled. Meanwhile, school classes and non-essential government services have been suspended for Monday. Tens of thousands of people have taken to the streets in the South Korean capital to demand action on climate change. Protesters blamed what they called capitalist governments for the destruction of the global ecosystem. Frank Smith has more from Seoul.
Tens of thousands of people gathered on the streets of Seoul Saturday demanding action on what is widely seen as a global environmental crisis. A wide range of groups representing a host of issues raised their voices, with some arguing for drastic changes to what they see as a dominant yet abusive and unequal economic system.
Capitalism, by its very nature, seeks to expand infinitely, but the earth is finite. The system repeats mining, producing, consuming and discarding. And the decision-making rests with a few companies and those with capital. The climate crisis is caused by this undemocratic capitalist economic system.
Many activists suggested companies need to change their behavior and individuals their buying habits. A core target of environmental concern expressed by participants revolved around the need to reverse rising global temperatures. This past summer, South Korea's environmental challenges came to the fore, with rainfall not seen in a century, pouring down on the capital Seoul and causing more than a dozen deaths and billions of dollars in damages. South Korea's own weather agency linked the extreme weather event to climate change. Another contributing factor in climate change involves loss of biodiversity. South Korea is one of the most densely populated countries in the world, with limited wild spaces.
I believe that the most important problem in environmental issues is the destruction of many ecosystems. In fact, there are various creatures living in the area where I live, but I think the biggest problem is that habitats are decreasing.
Activists even called South Korea a villain, as it ranks 9th in the world in carbon dioxide emissions, with President Yoon Suk-yeol planning to decrease the level of renewables in South Korea's energy mix. Frank Smith, Seoul.
That does it for this edition of World News.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
When your horse returns to Alcamp Riderless.
أزور سيدي ومولاي ومعتمدي ورجاي
The ocean of dua
الإمام الحسين عليه السلام زيارة
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura, so stay with us.
وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ ابْنَ مَرْجَانَ وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ عُمَرَ ابْنَ سَعَدٍ وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ شِمْرًا.
Brothers and sisters, as you were with us, we were discussing this excerpt of Ziyaratul Ashura. وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ بْنَ مَرْجَانَ وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ عُمَرَ بْنَ سَعْدٍ. And may Allah distance from His mercy Umar ibn Sa'd. We said Umar ibn Sa'd was really hesitant at first to take charge of the army and battle against Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But when he realized that the governorship of Ray will be taken from him, I mean, it will not be given to him after his fight against Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he thought maybe he should take charge of the army against Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And the interesting thing is that even when he has accepted this responsibility, Imam alayhi salam, with his encircling mercy and love for salvation of the enemies, calls him and advises him to abandon the forces, to come join his side and join the people who will attain salvation. This is the true embodiment of the meaning when we say the Ahlul Bayt are Safinatun Najat, the Ark of Salvation. This is exactly what we understand from this. خَلَقَكُمُ اللَّهُ أَنْوَارًا فَجَعَلَكُمْ بِعَرْشِهِ مُحْتِقِينَ حَتَّى مَنَّ عَلَيْنَا بِكُمْ فَجَعَلَكُمْ فِي بُيُوتٍ أَذِنَ اللَّهُ أَنْ تُرْفَعَ وَيُذْكَرَ فِيهَا اسْمُهُ. Allah created you in the form of light. The Ahlul Bayt and their light were created before the creatures. They were placed around Allah's throne. They were engaged in glorifying Allah until He subhanahu wa ta'ala puts each of those pure souls in a body at the proper time. The Ahlul Bayt are like Noah's Ark. From the time the Ahlul Bayt were placed around Allah's throne, they try to save the ones who have fallen into the whirlpool of tribulation. فَبَلَغَ اللَّهُ بِكُمْ أَشْرَفَ مَحَلِّ الْمُكَرَّمِينَ وَأَعْلَى مَنَازِلِ الْمُكَرَّمِينَ وَأَرْفَعَ دَرَجَاتِ الْمُرْسَلِينَ. And Allah made you reach the noblest position of glory, the highest station that was nearest to Him, and the loftiest status among those of the messengers.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is: do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates Him. He understands His dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So the Ahlul Bayt are the Ark of Salvation, truly. Abu Dharr, touching the door of Kaaba, said, I have heard Allah's Messenger say, Ala, إِنَّ مَثَلَ أَهْلِ بَيْتِي فِيكُمْ مَثَلُ سَفِينَةِ نُوحٍ. Beware that the parable of my Ahlul Bayt among you is like Noah's Ark. مَنْ رَكِبَهَا نَجَى. Whoever enters it will be saved. وَمَنْ تَخَلَّفَ عَنْهَا هَلَكَ. And whoever refuses to enter it will suffer perdition. And this is how the Ahlul Bayt have introduced themselves, and this is how they have proven themselves to be. How many of these people were saved on the verge of falling just because of the invitation of the Ahlul Bayt, just because of the encircling mercy of the Ahlul Bayt. نَحْنُ سَفِينَةُ النَّجَاةِ مَنْ تَعَلَّقَ بِهَا نَجَى وَمَنْ حَادَ عَنْهَا هَلَكَ. We are the boat of salvation. Whoever holds on to it will be saved, and whomever keeps away from it will meet perdition. فَمَنْ كَانَ لَهُ إِلَى اللَّهِ حَاجَةٌ فَلْيَسْأَلْ بِنَا أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ. And whoever has a request from Allah should ask it through us, the Ahlul Bayt. Let us end our discussion in this episode by having a look at this beautiful word of Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam, who said, اجعلوا أهل بيتي منكم مكان الرأس من الجسد ومكان العينين من الرأس. Consider my Ahlul Bayt as the head of the body and as the two eyes to the head. فَإِنَّ الْجَسَدَ لَا يَهْتَدِي إِلَّا بِالرَّأْسِ. The body cannot find the way except with the head. وَلَا يَهْتَدِي الرَّأْسُ إِلَّا بِالْعَيْنَيْنِ. And the head cannot find the way except with the eyes. So, it now becomes clear as to why the companions of the Ahlul Bayt during their lives considered them as head and eyes, without whom life was nothing but blindness and perdition. And even considering this in our minds, the night of Ashura, we see Imam Hussein alayhi salam giving his companions the choice to revoke allegiance to him and leave him. But they unanimously decided to stay with him because they loved him truly from the bottom of their hearts. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
In the limelight.
Despite promising to reform Trump-era immigration policies, U.S. President Joe Biden has yet to take immediate action. On his first day in office, and in a publicity stunt, he merely canceled Trump's so-called immigration order, and yet he didn't solve migrants' problems. Human rights groups, while expressing deep concern about the recent illegal transfer of migrants by some Republican governors under false promises and also mass deportation of immigrants by government officials, described their action as a violation of international law. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world press and news agencies to shed more light on the issue. Stay tuned, please. The Guardian Daily wrote, the U.S. Democratic lawmakers have called on the Justice Department to investigate whether Florida and Texas officials broke any federal law when they moved dozens of asylum seekers from Texas to Martha's Vineyard under false pretenses. The letter from the congressional representatives Jerry Connolly, Sylvia Garcia, Ted Lieu, and dozens of other Democrats followed the emergence of a report in which a 27-year-old migrant said he was paid $200 by a mystery figure known as Perla to find people outside the San Antonio Migrant Center to board a flight. The migrant, who was called Emmanuel, told the San Antonio report that he gave Perla contact information for 10 other migrants. The letter said, as the federal government retains jurisdiction over cases that involve interstate travel, we request the Department of Justice investigate whether any federal funds were used to operate a fraudulent scheme and request the Department of Justice make a determination as to whether officials in Texas and Florida violated federal law. At least one criminal investigation has already been opened into the situation by a Texas sheriff, and Canali and others said the Justice Department should do the same. Multiple media reports have depicted how the asylum seekers had been misled once they arrived in Texas and were incorrectly told they were being flown to Boston. The letter said it is charged that immigration officials knowingly falsified mailing addresses for the migrants by selecting arbitrary homeless shelters across the United States with the expectation that migrants would be required to contact the wrong agency. Details have not yet emerged about the planning and execution of the plan, which was spearheaded by the office of Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. NBC News explains more about this story, saying the transportation service company that the Florida governor Ron DeSantis used to arrange flights for migrants to Martha Wainwright has contributed money to governor's top allies and has connections to a Florida official in charge of its immigration policy. Virtual Systems Incorporation, an Oregon-based aviation company that DeSantis used to fly asylum seekers to the liberal-leaning Massachusetts island, has connections to DeSantis' political allies and has donated money to various campaigns. The company once had legal representation from the Florida congressman, Matt Gaetz, who was previously part of DeSantis' transition team when he became governor, and Gaetz former law partner Larry Keefe, who now works as the state's public safety czar and carries out the controversial relocation program. Florida State Representative Jay Trumbull Jr., a Republican involved in obtaining funding for the relocation program as Appropriations Committee Chair, received a $1,000 donation from Virtual during his campaign for Florida State Senate this year. The company also donated over $12,000 in total to various Florida political campaigns, including $2,500 to a super PAC that supported Gaetz. DeSantis' administration has continually refused to release information on money it has given Virtual for its role in relocating asylum seekers. So far, the company was awarded $12 million contract and has received more than $1 million from Florida to fly asylum seekers to Democrat-led northern cities, including migrants who are located in other states. Public records have confirmed that Florida paid Virtual $615,000 recently to recruit about 50 migrants in Texas and fly them to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts, with authorities noting that many resources like cash assistance and job training when no arrangement had been made with the island. The Intercept website elaborates more about the issue, saying the charactered flights are currently the subject of a criminal investigation in Texas, as well as a civil suit from the asylum seekers themselves, who say they were deceived into going. The Virtual company was also been expected to fly another group of asylum seekers on Tuesday, September 20th, to an airport located near Joe Biden's beach house in Delaware, but the charter flight never arrived, though Florida gave Vertel an additional $950,000. As a result, 20 migrants who were hoping to travel to the state were left stranded in San Antonio, with a source familiar with the governor saying the governor purposely left people in the dark about the flight's plans. DeSantis' administration has not released details of the contract it awarded to Vertel or disclosed why Vertel was selected to conduct a relocation program or answered inquiries as to whether multiple bids were solicited in regards to the program as is required by law. While DeSantis has defended the program, his administration has faced intense criticism that they did not have budget authority to fly asylum seekers, and Florida lawmakers have questioned whether the flights were legal. Lawyers representing the migrants have also argued that their clients are not unauthorized aliens, but are asylum seekers, which is a distinct legal category.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Age does not matter, it's the heart that counts. A Guatemalan female footballer has proved that there is no point one should worry about the age. 57-year-old Alma Salazar has a passion for soccer and takes care of her team's goalpost. Known as Flying Granny, she launches herself and deflects a ball that's looking for the nets. The passion for the sport was born when she was 19 years old. She started training with a men's team where she often found a place as a goalkeeper. Since then, Alma has played for several professional and amateur football clubs. In her room that overlooks a local stadium, Alma keeps the trophies she has won on a table, most of them as the least defeated goalkeeper. Locals praise her as an unbeatable goalkeeper.
A free climber known as the French Spider-Man scales a 48-story skyscraper in Paris to fulfill a goal he set for himself once he reached the age of 60.
A few years back, I promised myself that the day I turn 60, I have to climb the total tower. Because 60 years old marks retirement age in France, and so I thought this would make a very good nod.
Alain Roberts says this building is not as hard as others he has climbed. The French Spider-Man has ascended over 100 of the world's tallest buildings, including the Sydney Tower, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, amongst many others. Roberts says he spent 2 decades climbing mountains before attempting urban climbs. Using his rock climbing experience, he sometimes carries a small bag of climbing chalk to help him grasp the small protrusions of building walls. Many of his climbs can last several hours. The 60-year-old daredevil says he wants to give people the message that age is a number and one can still be active and do sports. Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens, with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC. They're back as India has revealed or released several of them into the grasslands of Kuna National Park after a 70-year absence in the country. The 8 radio-coloured African cheetahs made the long journey from Namibia. The big cats were released during a ceremony by Prime Minister Narendra Modi that coincided with his birthday. After their acclimation in the national park, they will be released into a 5-hectare spread of land in central India, covered by grassland and forest. The felines will share the landscape with other animals and roam with leopards, sloths, and striped hyenas. Their reintroduction is the culmination of a 13-year effort to restore the species, which vanished from the country decades ago. Another 12 cheetahs are expected to join the fledgling Indian population next month from South Africa. With more funding, the country hopes to gradually increase the population of cheetahs to around 40. World Cleanup Day unites millions of volunteers, governments and organizations to tackle the global waste problem and build a sustainable world. People in several countries joined the efforts again for a waste-free world. Volunteers were seen in mangrove forests in the suburb of Bangkok. They collected more than 1.5 tons of rubbish in just a few hours. Trash picking events were also held in the Philippines and Vietnam. In Hanoi, hundreds, mostly students armed with metal tongs and sacks, walked along major roads. They said their aim is to raise awareness about protecting the environment. In Manila, people cleaned up the city's beaches that are major tourist attractions. The annual cleanup day has been running for over a decade. From divers collecting marine debris to children picking up trash on beaches have just one goal: make our planet a cleaner place.
Chinese astronauts are celebrating their first ever mid-autumn festival in outer space while sharing their otherworldly experience with people on Earth. The crew had a close-up view of the moon from China's Tiangong space station and their third month in space. On the occasion, the ground crew organized a series of celebrations, including a family reunion for the astronauts. The ground crew also prepared elaborate food packages that had been prepared before the launch of the spacecraft. Typically, the traditional festival is kicked off by the first viewing of the full moon on the 15th day of the eighth month of the lunar calendar. Despite being able to see the moon rise and set 16 times a day, the astronauts say the moon is special on this occasion. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice, and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals. Most of the time, you have to visit an exhibition to see art. But what if art comes to see you instead? Well, a group of artists in Mali have created a floating art venue that will travel up and down the River Niger. It's called the Pirogue du Zem, which is a floating vessel. It's designed to host plays, exhibitions, dance shows, and so much more. The idea is to make art a movable feast that is no longer restricted to fixed venues in cities and accessible to all people. The project was created by a local artist and architect who had a vision to bring art to the masses. The vessel is 20 meters long and 6 meters wide, built with storage and enough space for exhibition. Government officials say the floating venue will showcase Mali's talents and creativity while attracting tourists.
Colombia is known for its tourist attractions and is full of breathtaking natural sights such as beaches, mountains, deserts, and forests. The South American nation is also one of the few places that give tourists the chance to have an encounter with whales. Every year, from July to October, domestic and foreign tourists flock to Colombia's Pacific coast to catch a glimpse of humpback whales. The large animals reach the coast after traveling thousands of kilometers from Antarctica and southern Chile. But for visitors, there are strict rules to help preserve the area and the whales. Tourists are now being welcomed for whale watching after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. This is also the time when humpback whales start their reproductive process. Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
Illegal hunting and hybridization with American crocodiles have for decades threatened their populations, with some species being on the verge of extinction. But there are some people who put their lives at risk to save the natural heritage. A Cuban researcher has released a baby crocodile that was confiscated from illegal hunters back into the wild. It was a happy moment for Etienne Perez, who went waist-deep in the dark water of Zapata Swamp to free Cuban crocs, the smallest known range of any living crocodile species. Cuban scientists were racing for quite some time to save the rarest crocodile. The government has protected virtually all of the vast swamp, widely considered to be the best preserved in the Caribbean. But the scientists say more efforts are needed to save the nature.
Releasing crocodile seized from poachers is really impressive because we return the animal to a free life in the wild. In the case of the animals in the hatchery, we are trying to increase the historical range of the Cuban crocodile and, of course, increase the number of these individuals in the wild.
Cuban scientists estimate that around 4,000 crocodiles continue to live in the wild. But because the area they prefer within the wetland is relatively small, a climate-related disaster, increasingly common now globally, could wipe out the brunt of the population. They say illegal hunting for decades is also threatening crocodile populations.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.